Robin Leffler's first friend was a tricorder, Wesley Crusher's first friend was a warp core, and Worf made a Tarvokian pound cake. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Serac Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Huss. Today we're doing a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 5, Episode 6, The Game, story by Susan Sackett, Fred Bronson, and Brannon Braga, teleplay by Brannon Braga, directed by Corey Allen. This was October 26, 1991. Where were you? Guess what, everybody? We have a very special guest. We are super excited. We've been talking about him for 5 seasons. He is here, Mr. Will Wheaton. How are you, Will?
I'm so happy to be here. It's really great to see you both.
It's great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to say, first of all, thank you for pioneering the space of the young kid in space for me. You did it, and I've lived a wonderful life as a result of my experience with it, and you know, you paved the way. And so I think, first of all, I need to just pay homage for you paving the way in the space of Star Trek and young men.
Thank you so much. I am watching Deep Space Nine. I told you this at the Picard premiere, but I'm watching Deep Space Nine for the first time. When we were kids and it was new, I had a weird sibling rivalry and my own insecurity and like couldn't do it because like I felt weird about it. And I'm so glad that I waited until I was like an adult and mature because it's such an amazing series and all of you guys are so good. I keep feeling so retroactively envious of you. You get these wonderful scenes with Aaron. You get these incredible scenes with Avery. And I remember at a con recently, someone brought Jake Sisko up. And I said, you know, I kind of feel like Wesley Crusher crawled so that Jake could walk, so that Adira Tall on Star Trek Discovery could fly. And
wow.
There is a weird thing in me that really just like explodes inside of me when I talk to you, because you're the only other person in the world who knows what I know on a cellular level in a way that can't be spoken, but we both just know because we were kids and we were there.
Thank you for that.
I don't believe I get that. I don't think I deserve that credit.
You
just
do.
Showed up. But thank you.
I mean, you
thank
pioneered
you so
in
much.
That space. I mean, and because you were successful at it, they decided to do it again with me. And I did have that chance to get, you know, different kinds of storylines, to get to actually be more of a kid and watch that growth. I thought they put you more in an adult situation when they introduced your character. It was somebody who was kind of, I mean, the captain is like, get this kid off the bridge. So it's already starts in a negative space. And so they didn't give you the opportunity, I feel like, to really flex your acting skills, which you have tremendous amount of skills. I remember watching you as before I even did Star Trek on Stand By Me, one of my favorite kid movies growing up. Loved your character. So as far as your abilities, clearly they chose you because you had the intellect, the reason, the sense to communicate this futuristic version of society. I thought you did an admirable job of just expressing that intellect, being colorful, being, you know, difficult to be young with older people around you that are all, you know, in this Shakespeare kind of vein and classical.
You were around that too, just like
yes.
I was. Did you feel intimidated the way I did? Just like, oh man, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
yeah.
was the whole,
like, I don't
like,
want to disappoint
I don't want to
them.
Mess.
I don't want to let them down.
Yeah, because I knew that I was, like, you know, playing ball with professionals. And
100%.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, you know, it's like somebody passes you the ball. You don't want to miss that shot because you feel like, you know, all this weight is on you to just not stand out, basically. I didn't want to be the weakest link. That's
100. Oh, my God, so much. Like, just, like, if nobody notices me because I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do, and then I can go back to my schoolroom, great. That'd be amazing.
Yes.
So
yes.
You sparked two memories for me. One of them is David Gerrold, who was a writer on the original series, was consulting on Next Gen when it was in development, and Gene wanted to put in the Wesley Crusher character. And it was David who said, I don't think this is a good idea. I don't think that having your kind of Will Robinson gee whiz space genius character is good. I think it's going to turn the audience off. So if you want to put this character in, you need an actor who has like some depth and like gravitas to him. What he was describing in me was that like I was just so unbelievably sad and like I was going through so much bad stuff in my own real life that that presented as seriousness and thoughtfulness and that sort of thing. And he said, I just saw this kid in Stand By Me, and I think he could probably handle this role. And he wrote that in a memo to Bob Justman, who was also helping develop. And that memo is the reason I even got an audition for the show. I've always been so grateful to David for like kind of having that belief in me at that time.
I think that stood out for all of us who anybody who saw that you stood out as a remarkable actor who showed range and just really delivered a A1 like award-winning type performance that stands through the ages. I mean, that movie still is one of stands on its own legs, you know?
Thanks. Yeah, we're all really lucky to all of us who were in it are really lucky. You know, some people, most actors, I think, would spend their entire careers really wanting just one thing like that, right? Or like never even getting to be in something that matters the way that that did. And you know, I was just a kid. I didn't know what I was doing. I just followed Rob Reiner's direction, and like I kind of was that kid in real life. You know, that was I was. People kept telling me who I was instead of asking me who I wanted to be. And that was really hard for me. And Gordy was experiencing a lot of that too. I was the scapegoat in my family, and my brother is the golden child, and Gordy was experiencing that too. And one of the things that I learned from that movie that I carried with me through all of my work that's good, is to not think about it too much, to not get caught up in my head, and to not watch myself when I'm working, and just kind of be there. And to bring it around to the game, I watched it this morning because
Nice.
I watch if I happen to see that Next Generation is on somewhere on television when I'm like going through the program guide, I'll watch whatever episode it happens to be, unless it's one that I'm in a lot because I get cringy and weird when I watch myself. But I watched myself in this, and I saw a couple of things that were really interesting to me. I was able to separate myself from Wesley Crusher. I was able to separate myself as a person and an actor from just this character. And I was like, this guy's really smart. He's figured like some stuff out. There's this scene at the beginning that I had completely forgotten about when they bring him into the observation lounge and everyone's there and it's like a surprise and Worf's made him a cake and all that. And I was watching how overjoyed Wesley Crusher was that his family was there and excited to see him. And I was really sad that I don't remember feeling that way as a person, not because of the cast, not because that wasn't going on, but just because it was so long ago. And that was a difficult time in my life. So coming back for this episode, and getting to like be in the family again, was a really wonderful experience. And I had forgotten a lot of it. I didn't, it wasn't like it was asleep in my body, right? But after watching it today, I was like, oh man, I remember that scene and I remember doing that stuff. And like it was just, and the show's kind of a bottle episode too. Like it's only
It
on the
is.
Enterprise, which is
Yeah.
nuts. I didn't even remember it being like that. There's one other thing I wanted to say to you. Oh, it's so interesting to me that you were talking about wanting to be there to get the ball because I heard a hockey player, I'm a massive hockey nerd, and I heard this guy talking about playing with Wayne Gretzky. And he said, look, man, he makes you better because you do not want to be the one guy on the ice whose stick isn't there when he passes it to you when nobody knows that pass is coming. Like, you don't want to waste that pass. That's how I felt when I worked with Patrick. Like when I worked with the other people, I felt like I was working with my very cool aunts and uncles. When I worked with Patrick, it was like I was working with like the dad figure.
Yeah.
And like, I just did not want to mess up. And
Yeah.
I didn't want to be like, I didn't want to bungle the pass.
And you
And it
held
made
your
me a better
own.
actor.
You held your own. You mentioned being smart. That's one thing that you sold, I think, from the beginning. I don't think anybody questioned that you were smart. That was a believable characteristic that you sold for this Crusher character. I mean, I saw that character. I saw that Geordi respected you as an in the engineering room. I saw that your mother respected you when it came to the medical stuff. I saw that Data, even Data, was curious. There was a mutual exchange of curiosity between the two of you, where
Such a
that scene,
wonderful scene. That
yes.
court walk and talk in the corridor.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I noticed in this episode is that it's a very slow burn. Like, look, there's not a lot of story here. This is not a thick story.
Right.
The original story idea, now this is apocryphal. This is the way I remember it, that Susan Sackett was Gene's executive assistant. And the way that I remember it is that she just wrote down the enterprise, the crew of the Enterprise gets addicted to a game. And they bought it, and Brannon wrote this script from that idea. And it moves this script and this episode, it breathes. It really takes its time. It's weirdly horny at the beginning. Like, it's odd. Troy with
Yeah.
the ice cream, I was like, you are weirdly horny in this scene. And I
Yeah.
remember Corey Allen, who I love, he was a wonderful director. Corey would, if you were, he seemed to direct a lot of my episodes that had a lot of weight to them. And what a Corey would be off stage, and he was like an actor's director. Like, he, whatever was going on in on the set, he like felt it in his body. So he's like just acting real hard with you just off camera. And I remember him like, in an effort to be helpful, describing the like sexually gratifying experiences that the game is giving people, but it's creepy and weird and gross, and like it's not working. And I just remember looking at I think it was Marina and doing this, like remember it was like particularly graphic, like with Gates, but it wasn't in a way that would like get you called to HR. It was like, I'm trying to direct you, but it's just not landing.
You know, it's funny. When I remember this as one of the most memorable episodes of my youth, when I first saw this back in the day, hadn't seen it in so many years, and it was one of the first episodes I had seen back then. I did not catch all of that weird sexual stuff going on until
Neither
this
did
watch.
I.
When I watched it, I was like, whoa, I do not remember. Like, are they orgasming? Like, this is a
It was
totally
like
different thing than what I
orgasmic, but
expected.
so
Yeah.
that's the uncomfortable weird direction I'm talking about. Like, he's basically describing orgasms, and
Yeah.
it was like, ugh, it was gross. I get it. I cannot stress enough, it was not predatory and weird. It was an effort by a very old style of directing to try to like really bring emotion into the thing, and he was good at that. He did it in a lot of other episodes.
Euphoric. What
You know,
was
the thing
what
about Geordi, LeVar's one of my favorite people in the world. I love him so much. I admire him and I look up to him. And I was always so grateful when I got to go work in engineering with him. First of all, I loved that set. That set was just, it was great. There was so much to do on that set. There were as close as we got to practical set pieces, you know, like at least we could go, like there are lots of fake buttons to touch in that set. I can't remember if it was my idea for Wesley to jump over the engineering pool table when he's getting chased by Riker and Worf, or if that was in the script. But I remember I really pushed a lot of I pushed directors to let me like do stuff in engineering that said, this guy hangs out here, like sliding down the ladder and like being almost casual with a lot of the things in there, like that's where he goes. And that I was remembering watching this, being in engineering with LeVar, how I looked up to LeVar and loved LeVar and love LeVar, and wanted to make him proud in exactly the same way Wesley did. And with Data too, just walking down, doing that walk and talk. And those are always so much fun to do. And remembering Brent was just so funny and so easy to work with, and was one of those people who, like, at that time in my life, I felt like every person I interacted with, I was auditioning, like, please like me. I always felt like Brent just accepted me exactly as the kind of like the weird guy that I was. And that seed, I can see how I remember, sorry, I remember how much fun it was. And I love that they were doing that Data, like just trying on human emotions and trying to fake them and stuff. Just like,
That
when we would rehearse those, and Brent would just try different things, different ways of like being Data, trying to be human and kind of like not quite landing. Oh, it was so much fun.
I kind of
Were there
wish
people
this
in your,
story. Oh, I'm
so
sorry.
like on your show, like did you have these amazing scenes with Avery, and I'm so envious that you guys got to have father and son scenes. Because Gates and I didn't get to have a lot of mother and son scenes, and we loved them when we got them. But did you have a similar style of kind of like relationships with the different cast members? Like they filled kind of different, like, well, let's say family archetypes, kind of the way that they did for me. Did you get that?
100%, absolutely. So obviously Avery's going to be my dad, so that was naturally already a given. But everybody else kind of did feel this either like an enforcer type person that I was a little bit more fearful of, right? Like
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about. I was scared of him too.
and then there's the other kind of more like uncle type characters that were more in interested in the day-to-days of my life to some degree, and had a more of a personal relationship with me. So, but all of it in the end still felt like I'm like a fish out of water to some degree because of the age difference there,
Same.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I
I'm not
always
going to have
wish
the
that we had
same
had
side conversations.
like cousins, like that there have been younger people, or like, if you and I had overlapped by probably another year, right? Like
It would have made sense.
maybe I would have crossed the street more than I
Well, that's what I
did.
was going to say. I thought Ashley Judd character brought out a side of you as well that I wanted to see explored more. I thought that was perfect. Where did they why didn't they have this kind of love interest for your character already going on before? That made sense to me, and it felt right. Did
One of
she
the
was
worst.
that was she somebody that you were involved with in casting, or you just show up on the set and you see that it's Ashley Judd?
So when this episode came around, I was not on the show full time anymore. I'd been off for a year. And I cannot remember if I was filming. This is 1991. So I was probably filming Toy Soldiers when we did this episode. It was right around that time. I can't remember for sure. And what I remember is, that the agent calls and says they would like, they're checking availability, they want you to come back. And I was like, I love that. Yes, just tell me when to show up. At some point, there was talk, Ashley Judd, Ashley Judd, Ashley Judd. What I remember about that time is that in 1991, she wasn't Ashley Judd. She was Winona Judd's sister, or Naomi Judd's sister, Judd's sister. And I remember there being like some weird, there was weird energy around that. Like, l I felt like this young woman was having this opportunity to establish herself on her own, as separate from like her family name and all of that. And I was too young and too immature to even be aware of if that was a struggle for her or not. I remember that she was extremely kind, easy to work with, but also very private and reserved. And like, we didn't like hang out. But when we were on set together, we had a really nice time. I understand that she doesn't like to talk about it. Like she doesn't like to be associated with Star Trek, which I don't get. I don't know why that is. She's absolutely entitled to that. But I think she's lovely in this role.
I do
I
too.
think the character's really well drawn. I thought that their relationship, in 41 minutes or whatever, was very believable and very sweet.
And very fun.
Really fun.
Playful.
I recall Corey Allen overdoing it on direction with us, to where I was like, dude, you're cock blocking me. Will you settle down? I was like, you've gone from wingman to like annoying dog who won't stop sniffing my legs. Settle down, pal. And so some of those scenes I remember that I felt uncomfortable, but not because of her. But to your point, Rock, yes. Having him experience and explore, you want to get together after work, right? It's another thing that I love about Jake, and I thought
I
that
got
they did.
Nog.
They
I had,
learned, man. They learned from the mistakes they made with me. They learned to let Jake be a kid, and then juxtapose. I'm a kid, and I just recently watched like Jake and Benjamin are like going off on a shuttlecraft to go do a cool thing together. I don't remember what it is, and some.
Explorers,
It's
right?
like some go
That's
sideways when
my
you're out there.
favorite Deep Space Nine episode because it's a father and son adventure
Oh
together.
my God. I watched it and I was tearing up just because I was like, oh, I can only imagine. Like Patrick and I did a thing where we were in a shuttlecraft together. And it was like 2 days of us just in the shuttlecraft. And it was like a master class of acting with Patrick Stewart, where you get to keep, like, okay, so I'm going to go try out what I just learned. And that, like, but also that sense of, like, I just felt like I'm with somebody who is special to me, and this time is special. And I only got to do it once. And I was so envious watching you get to do that. And it just makes, it's part of what goes into my calculus of, like, Wesley crawled and Jake walked. I just see that and think, God, that's so great. It was wonderful to see that. And that's what
Yeah,
happens a lot in this episode. There's just that slow breathing walk and talk.
there
It's,
is.
a lot. They put so much story into modern serialized storytelling. And we don't have the filler episodes. We don't have the bottle episodes. We don't have episodes where people just talk about things like that scene with Riker and Troi at the beginning of this episode. If you were making it today, that scene was like 2.5 pages. It would maybe be a quarter of a page today, right? He would like walk up to her and be like, I don't know, that's just not as good as you think it is. Come play this sexy game with me. And that was it, right? And then and we wouldn't get that moment where you see character develop. And I just see a lot of that in this episode. Fifth
It
season. Weird.
worked super well. And I enjoyed that kind of back and forth scene with Picard in his office too, where you talk about Boothby and you talk about that. I mean, that felt like a good moment between you. And he actually, the welcome that you got was excellent as well. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned not being there for the year. The leave from Star Trek was an amicable leave. Was it something like, I have movie offers here going and I need to go and do that?
So I will truncate this story. It's out on it's on the internet in places, and it's in my memoir, Still Just a Geek, available wherever you buy books and audiobooks.
Still just a geek. Got it.
Still Just a
Yes.
Geek. So this would have been, I want to say, the beginning of the fourth season, right? I can't remember precisely the dates, but I had been cast by Milos Forman to work in a movie called Valmont, and they wanted me to go to Paris to work on the movie. It was the movie that was going to bring my film career back to life. My film career had stalled after Stand By Me. My parents sold me out, made me do this horrific garbage horror movie where my sister and I were physically and emotionally abused on the set. They got a ton of money for it, but it ended my film career. after Stand By Me, River Phoenix did Mosquito Coast and like got and Running on Empty and things like that. And I just did movies that nobody cared about. But I did do Star Trek, which obviously still really matters to people. So when I was working on the show, I really wanted to do both. I wanted to do films during the hiatus and just do work on Star Trek during the year. So I had this offer to do the movie, and the production schedule would have required me to miss one episode of Next Generation. And that year, we were filming out of order. So we were shooting, we'll say, just for the sake of numbers, we were shooting like we were going to do like episode 402 first, and then we would do 401 the next week. And my team talked to production, I guess, and it was Rick Berman who said, we can't let you out of that episode. It's a Wesley episode. And like we can't shoot around you. And presumably my agents tried to make things work, and we couldn't make it work. And he was like, look, we can't do it. I remember this clearly. I am personally writing this stuff with you and Gates that's really important. It's going to move your relationship forward. And I was like, oh, okay. And then a few days before production was to begin on that episode, I was written out of it completely.
Oof.
And it felt to me at the time like it was a choice and it was a message. And I was hurt and I was angry and I felt controlled and I felt betrayed. And I was so angry at that time. I love my Star Trek cast and I love that I was Wesley Crusher. And I love Star Trek and I love what it means to my life. And all of that is true. And Stand By Me is a wonderful movie that I'm really good in. That is true as well. But I never wanted to be an actor. I did all of this stuff because my mom made me. So by the time I was like 16, 17 years old, and kind of figuring out like, oh no, I don't really like this. I don't really know what I'm doing with the rest of my life. Okay, well, if I do this film, maybe it'll help the film career because I know the TV show's not going to go on forever. When that happened, I was so furious because it just felt like unnecessary. It felt cruel and controlling. And I said to my agent, I quit. I don't want to be on this anymore. I don't want to be part of this because. And it wasn't really entirely about Star Trek. It was more about like, I don't want to be in any of this at all. I want to be a person. I want my family to see me as their kid, not as their source of income. And so when I had been off the show for about a year at that point, and I really missed my cast, and I felt like I had, I'd made a really emotional, really angry decision that I couldn't take back. And when they said, come back and do this, I was like, yeah, I would love that. I'd love to come back and do more and do it again. And it was wonderful. And everybody there, I got the same welcome back that Wesley Crusher got back, from
Nice.
everybody, from the crew, from everybody else like that. When I've written about this and I've spent a lot of time thinking about it and talking about it, I'm so grateful for the time that I spent on Star Trek, and I'm grateful to be part of Star Trek. As I've said to you, like we're a big, giant, weird family, and we show up for each other, and that really matters to me. It means something to me as I start to get into elder territory in the Star Trek world. Like maybe I can bring a little bit of that energy and that vibe to all of the shows, like let's remember to be here for each other. We all helped carry this torch a little bit over time. When I got to go back and be there again, I was aware of what it brought to my life and what the relationships with the actors brought to my life. That I just hadn't really been aware of because it was sort of masked by a lot of the pain that I was experiencing at the time. I wouldn't change anything because I love my life where it is now. And, like there's an episode called Tapestry that's all about this.
Totally.
But it was cool to come back. It was cool to come back. And I remember being on the in the makeup chair, and how excited Mike Westmore was to put my sideburns on me. He's like, I'm gonna do
Oh, good
something.
old Mike Westmore.
Yeah,
Love that
3 minutes
guy.
worth of sideburn application.
Oh, man. Yeah.
A lot of people don't talk about it, but there's a lot of hurdles to overcome as a young actor in the business. And when you start to
Yeah.
get success, you get exposed to a lot of things that could ruin your life or end your life potentially. And so I want to say that I also want to congratulate you for surviving all of that trauma,
Oh, thank you.
for staying positive, for keeping that positivity for us. Really, you're holding it together for the rest of us who love you, and you also resonate a positive energy. So you're not trying to hurt anybody with the trauma that you've been through. You're actually trying to teach people and be there for others. And I just want to say, surviving that is very difficult. I know a lot of friends who were actors that are not here today because they couldn't make it through all the hurdles. And so I commend you for that alone, surviving, thriving, staying
Thanks.
focused. But I also want to talk about some of the new work you're doing with the audiobooks,
Okay.
because you're really killing it in that space. You just finished doing the Bill Gates memoir. I want to,
That's
talk
awesome.
about that. Yeah.
It's crazy, man. A couple of years ago, he wrote a book about like just by coincidence about preventing pandemics, and it came out during lockdown. And I was asked, they came to me, Bill Gates Incorporated came to me and said, would you please narrate this book? It's like, absolutely.
What?
And then he did another one that is about the climate crisis. And they asked me to do that one. And I remember saying, as a joke to my wife, yeah, one of these days, I'm going to play Bill Gates. It's like, that's never going to happen. I got a call. Would you narrate his memoir? It's like, what? Like, I'm going to literally be his voice? Okay. It was really fun. Now, what I suspect happened is that Bill Gates was, Bill Gatesing and doing whatever he does. And someone came to him and was like, okay, so here's a list of 1,000 things we got to get through today. And they start going through the list. And he's like, yes, no, yes, no, no, bagels, no, yes. And then they get to, okay, so someone's got to narrate your audiobooks. And we're thinking that we want to use this guy. He did Ready Player One. And Bill Gates went, oh, Ready Player One. I know what that is. Sure, we'll approve him. Like, he has no idea who I am.
I
There's
doubt
no
that,
way.
though.
There's just no way that Bill Gates knows. But it's fun to pretend that he does.
I think there's a good chance
So
Bill Gates watched Star Trek, you know?
I would say
there's a
there's a
very,
good
yeah, okay,
chance.
so that's true, which makes it even more remarkable because he's the right age to be one of those guys who was like, nah, Wesley, boo, right?
Right.
His story is really fascinating. And it's just about him being a kid and founding Microsoft. That's what this entire story is about. And when I sat down to record this, I have the experience of narrating my own memoir. And when I narrated my memoir, I made a choice as an actor. You always have to know who you're talking to. You have to know why you're talking to them, like kind of what you want from them when you're done telling them whatever it is you're doing. So when I did my autobiography, I just thought, okay, so I'm going to do this like we're just sitting here, right? And I'm just telling you my story, and we're going through it, and there's like some asides and things like that, and then I'm coming back to it. And I had that point of view through all of it. When I started work on Source Code, which is the title of his memoir, I had a conversation with Gabrielle DeCure, my director. She directed me in Still Just a Geek, and is a terrific creative partner for me. Like, we do really great work together. And we talked about it. There needs to be a very reflective quality to this, right? Like, this is a man who's like in his 70s and is kind of going through these things that he remembers, and a little bit of it is confessional, and a little bit of it is like struggling to dig those memories up. And what I ended up doing was treating it as a performance. I am portraying Bill Gates. I am the character of Bill Gates in this story. And I think it's the best work I've ever done. It's so easy for a memoir that's not your own to become dry and clinical and feel like documentary narration. And I didn't want this to be that way. I really wanted it to feel like you're sitting with him while he tells you his story. And I felt that a compelling story deserved a compelling narrator who really cared about what was going on and had a clear point of view about it. And somehow it elevated my work.
What was
And
the
how beautiful.
key component of his character that you wanted to hone in on in order to get his voice or
He
his spirit?
he's the smartest guy in the room. Every time he goes into a room, he's the smartest guy in the room from his point of view. And there is a point where after he's gone, list, does everybody know I'm the smartest guy in the room? And this is when he's a kid. And he's like, look, does everybody get that? Okay, you all get that. You're not accepting that I'm the smartest guy in the room. I just don't have time for you. And like, that's kind of like what he does. And he has these things that he wants to accomplish. He's got these tasks that are really important to him. And he talks about how he feels he would be diagnosed on the spectrum somewhere if he were a kid today. And I agree with that, having played him in this book. I have people in my life and people that I'm close to who are on the spectrum. And I just thought, oh, I see a little bit of so and so in this, and I see a little bit of them in that. And as actors drew on those experiences to like literally give him a voice. But the big thing for me in that I remember throughout all of it is, if I approach this as Bill Gates, the billionaire, who is a larger than life figure, who is inscrutable and unreachable, the audience isn't going to feel any intimacy in this at all. And a biography, a memoir, autobiography really needs to feel intimate.
Personal.
Yeah, very personal. So I was just like, okay, there's a sense of gratitude in this book. There's a sense of gratitude to his parents and his sister and his partners and his friends. And I thought, okay, so I have everything I ever wanted. And now I'm looking out at the world going, well, what can I do with unimaginable wealth? What can I do to like make a mark somewhere? Okay. I'm just gonna be so grateful that there's a person here that I can talk to about this. All right, cool. You're a person who understands me. And I just thought maybe from his point of view, he's wanted to be understood his whole life. Right. And people always see him and they just see someone who's smart and aloof and so far in, like, so like intellectually reserved, like five steps behind everything, that he's kind of like an alien. And he just wants to tell his story his way. Well, that was me when I started my blog. Everyone thought they knew me because of a character I had played on television and a character I'd played in a movie, and I was neither of those things. And I just remembered that. Okay, I just want to make sure, I just want to be really clear. And I also just love that you're letting me tell you this story. And I approached it like that. And I felt it, you know, when he talks about losses, I did acting work. I imagined own losses that I've had in my life and imagined what it must have felt like for him. And when he had successes, I thought about those times when things got like, you know, I don't know. One of the biggest successes in my life was getting on the New York Times bestseller list. One of the greatest days of my life when my stepson asked me to adopt him. And I remembered those moments and just used the emotional sense memories and put them into the performance.
Wow, that's
I
beautiful.
just felt great. And then what I learned from that, and I don't know, I don't even know how to, I don't know how to describe it. It's just, there's a moment in like athletics where, oh my God, now I get how to swing this bat. I can't tell you what it is. I just know my whole body's finally working together. And like, I'm putting it in play more than I'm not. And that happened to me with audiobooks. I was fine. I was hitting for average, whatever. But like, this has actually let me hit it out of the yard every now and then. Like I finally like just had this feeling, and I think it reveals itself, the thing that I learned that I can't describe. It happened in this performance, and it happens in John Scalzi's book, When the Moon Hits Your Eye, which I think comes out in March, and Cory Doctorow's Picks and Shovels, which comes out around the same time. I did these three books back to back to back.
I was just going to ask you about that. I'm glad you brought those up. Yeah. Because we're out of time here, but before we go, can you tell us a tiny bit about those?
Picks and Shovels is the third book in a series Corey has written about a character called Marty Hench, who is a guy who's been in Silicon Valley from day one. And he's a forensic accountant who kind of solves crimes. And because Corey is just like a copy fighter and a free speech advocate, like a real one, not the fake fascist kind, but like a legitimate, like defender of freedom and stuff. All of his books have an air of polemic to them that are warnings about things that are examinations of the way power exploits workers. And Marty Hench is like a champion of these things. And the thing I love about these, I've done three of them now. One of the reasons I really love working in audio, and I'm pretty much done working on camera, I've gotten to play Marty Hench across 5 decades of his life. So I get to play him as a young man who's just getting started in his career. And then in across the books, I play him as he gets older and older. And we've done it out of order. I actually started with the last book first. And it was just really fun and satisfying to get to play this character who's real different. I would never get to play a character that ages 50 years. I just can't do it. And then John's book, When the Moon Hits Your Eye, is freaking hilarious. It is in the same vein as Starter Villain and Kaiju Preservation Society in that it's humorous and wry. To quote John, a real fun pop song of a short novel. And it is about what happens when one day, for reasons that no one can fully understand, the moon turns into actual cheese. And the story takes place all over the planet with all these different people in all these different careers and like social standings and educations and stories of their own. It's how all these different people all over the world react to that. So I got to play like 40 different characters and locations and responses to the same event was really, really fun.
Wow,
I have a
that
personal
sounds fun.
project that I hope will be announceable real, real soon that I've talked about as audiobook adjacent.
That's
I will do a,
exciting.
I'm gonna do a little I'm going to do a little bit, I'm going to do a business and promote myself. I'm at willwheaton.net. It is where I would ask anyone who cares to just go. There's a mailing list there. And I publish all the cool stuff that I do at my website when I do it.
Wow.
Sweet.
Okay, everybody, you have your marching
willwheaton.net.
orders. Yes, willwheaton.net. Remember, social media, it constricts what you see. Everything restricts what you see. But if you go to willwheaton.net and sign up for the newsletter, that information is going to be emailed directly to you, nobody in between. Will, this has been so awesome. We've been talking about you for years. We really, really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thank
Yes,
you for
thank you.
asking me. Sirach, I would love to go get some coffee privately and talk about being kids in the Star Trek universe.
Absolutely.
I feel like we have a lot to talk about that we don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's some camaraderie that we have that we don't know we have. And I would just love to participate in that.
Interestingly enough, I have felt connected to you even before meeting you. I mean, I don't know how many times your name has come up to me, just because of our similarities in roles on a Star Trek show, and so always Will Wheaton, Will Wheaton. And so before we had finally met at that premiere, I felt like I already knew you guys. But now that I'm
That's
watching
awesome.
this, now that I'm watching this show, I even know you more. And like I said, you've done an amazing job on the show. You overcame a lot. I know how difficult it is when you are a child actor, growing up trying to audition, and especially when it's not something that's truly what you want to do. So, kudos to you for just
Thanks,
giving
man.
us amazing work to always be able to cherish. I know you're kind of moving to the audio space now, and I hope that you are, trailblazing in that space as well. But thank you so much for paving the way for Jake Sisko to have a chance to explore his own part of the galaxy. So thank you.
Dude, it's like honestly, it's such an honor and it's such a privilege. If I'd known that I was doing it, I probably would have tried harder. Would have tried to do more.
You did a great job, man. We gotta we'll come back next time and talk about wardrobe because I do have a whole set of questions just on your wardrobe alone.
much,
We gotta exchange wardrobe notes next time, okay? But
right?
for now, amazing performance in this. Love the chemistry. Love seeing you back.
Thank you.
And one thing Star Trek does get right sometimes is paying homage and bringing people back to get some light. They did that with Denise Crosby and Tasha Yar, and they right their wrongs sometimes. When they make a mistake, they actually say, "Hey, let's get it right." And I think they get it right with this episode. So thank you. Thanks again, Will.
Thank you. If you want me to come back for, I think I have one more left before the series wraps up. You know where to find me. I'd be happy to do it.
The first duty.
The first duty.
That's a
You heard it here
big
first.
one. All right. Stick around, everybody. We're going to talk more about this episode. Remember, willwheaton.net. Do it. Sign up for the newsletter. That's the key. That's the most important thing. We'll be right back on the seventh rule.
Der Kick der Woche.
So viel extra sparen. Sichere dir jetzt mit deiner MyKick-Vorteilskarte zusätzliche 10% Rabatt auf alle bereits reduzierten Artikel. Auch online auf kick.de. Jetzt extra sparen, aber nur bis Sonntag und nur bei
Kick. Mehr als du denkst.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the seventh rule with Ciroc Frickin' Lofton.
Hello.
Man, that was just the coolest. That was
Yeah.
just the coolest damn guest, man. That was amazing. And again, thank you. A huge thank you to Will Wheaton for joining us.
Yeah.
All right. Here are some trivioids of the week, aptly named after that. Because these are trivial compared to what we just witnessed. Here they are. Etana steals Riker's communicator. The Enterprise is en route to an uncharted area called the Phoenix Cluster. Five new science teams just beamed aboard from the Zhukov. Robin Leffler's work has been so sensational, Geordi has decided to make her mission specialist. Riker doesn't fudge. Wait, Riker doesn't like fudge because he's a psychopath. To added that part in. Who doesn't like fudge? Deanna Troi never met a chocolate she didn't like. Wesley Crusher's Latin is improving. Worf made a Tarvokian pound cake. Data wants to teach Wes to dance. Wesley's neutrinos are drifting. Boothby didn't remember Picard at first. Robin Leffler's first friend was a tricorder. Wesley Crusher's first friend was a warp core. And Nurse Ogawa is at level 47 on the game. That was a 47 snuck in there. That's a fun one. Anyway, there was a lot in that one. And what you and Will were talking about earlier, amongst other things, was this episode was a slow burn. But it wasn't the kind of slow burn where you get bored and look at the clock. It was the kind of slow burn where you just enjoy the show. And I found myself when we were hitting kind of the climax, I looked and there was only 8 or 9 minutes left. I was like, whoa, how did that? I thought we were in the middle somewhere, and suddenly the episode was almost over. And that's when I was like, wow, well done, Star Trek. Well done.
Yeah, and you've talked about like believable relationships that happened in one episode. I think this
Yeah.
one was believable for
You're
me,
right. This is
Wes.
one of the few that actually worked because it was light. It was playful. What they're usually trying to convince us of is, oh my God, they fell in love and
Madly in love, and they want to
so is
marry each
ready.
other.
so-and-so is ready to run away with the other person and leave Starfleet forever. This was not that. This was just fun and light and cute and enjoyable.
Yeah. And it was like young love, and the whole resistance, like pushback, push and pull was felt real. This also gave us that slice of life stuff that we like, because we like seeing the cast. Mm-hmm. You know, I like them doing a surprise party kind of get together. I so love cute. Seeing that kind of stuff. And then each character in the beginning, I was like, oh, God, this is a Riker sleep.
I knew you were going to think that. And I was and I didn't remember that part. I was like, oh, my God, Sirach's going to turn this thing off. No, hang on, Sirach. Hang on. It gets better. I don't remember this part. And that dragged on for a long time, too, actually, that first opening scene. Yeah.
I was like, how long are you guys going to chase each other around this little set right here? It was like a literally 3 minutes of chasing this person around. I was like, all right, are we really going to do Riker sexcapade episode? Because we've seen too much of that. And thankfully, it turned away from that after some point.
Mercifully.
It went into this other subject, which was great. Here's the irony. I've talked about writing an episode for Deep Space Nine before. I pitched an episode, and the episode that I pitched was that Quark bought some kind of illicit drug on the black market and used that in his drinks.
And I remember you mentioning that, yes.
And it got everybody addicted to this drink. And so people would, you know, act out of character based on that. And that was my episode that I pitched.
Mm-hmm. And there's no better validation
that
says you're on the right track than this is actually a Star Trek episode. Yes.
Yes. And that's what they told me they said, this is very similar to an episode that they did on Next Generation, which I hadn't seen Next Generation to this point, right? Mm-hmm. So here I am. I was essentially pitching my version of the game to Ira.
That's awesome.
And you know, I didn't have a terrorist cell that they were working for. You know, I didn't have Quark. Quark was doing it strictly for profits because there was no rule against it. You know, and so he was going to say, hey, there's no rule that says you can't do it. So
there's no specific law that says you can't.
Yeah, right. So it was for profits. But in this case, I was pleasantly surprised to see this episode, because once I started to see that they were addicted to the game, I knew right away, oh, this is the episode that got my script rejected.
That's so cool, though, man. What a fun connection.
So full circle, and then Will Wheaton's in it. So that's another kind of all of these connective tissue over decades now, kind of playing themselves out. And I like that Star Trek, at least Next Generation, has revisited the characters that have left them. They did that with Tasha Yar, I mentioned. They're doing it now with Will Wheaton. I don't know if we're going to get a Pulaski.
That was a great point. But they did it with Beverly Crusher, actually, because remember, she was gone in the second season.
Oh, right.
They brought her back in the third season. No, that's a really good point. Star Trek tends to do the people right that they wronged previously. They make up for their mistakes. That's a really good point.
They make up for it, and they realize their loss. It's not like they say, oh, well, good riddance. They actually say, hey, you know what? Tasha Yar is a great character, and we need to bring her back for a storyline. And they did, and several times over, actually, with if you consider non-appearance mentions, but with Will Wheaton's character as well. And we also see Will Wheaton coming back as the guardian of Forever, I think, in the new show.
Oh, as a traveler. He was in Picard, and he was back in Prodigy as well. I mean, he's everywhere. Like, they are, I think everybody's in love with Will. They're like, how do we get him on our show? How do we convince him to say yes?
Yeah, because he's great. And I sympathize with a lot of the things that he said. He didn't externalize the trauma that he did. He didn't really verbalize what that was. But I know from my own experience that there can be issues with finances, you know, because you're not managing your own money underage. Right. There could be issue with the workload, just, you know, working adult hours as a child is stressful.
And you're
It
just
also
not
could be
allowed to
how
be a kid.
you're not allowed to be a
Like,
kid, and you're
I.
treated. You could be mistreated. He mentioned being mistreated by directors and such. You can be mistreated.
I'm grateful every
So.
single day when I look back at my childhood and I think about the fact that I was able to be a child. I got dirty. I got into trouble. I got into fights. I laughed. I screwed around. I was a kid. And sometimes you see examples of people that don't have that. In fact, most people in the world don't have that, including people like yourself and Will right here in our very own country. And I'm just grateful that I got to live that because the stuff that you guys had to go through, it's got to just stay with you forever. That's it. That's your childhood, man.
Yeah, and that's why I'm grateful for my experience with Avery so much, because he endeared himself in a way that made me feel like at least I had my dad there. So I didn't feel alone in a way that I think Will may have felt. I don't think they did his character a service by having him introduced as somebody that is not wanted on the bridge by the captain.
Good point.
You're immediately side with the person who's the captain. So if the captain doesn't like you around, the audience is going to say, yeah, why is this dude around? And so
And
you
that's
didn't
okay
give
to
him.
do to a 40-year-old, but a 14-year-old, that's tough. That's
That's a tough thing to
already,
overcome. Yeah, he's going through his own identity issues. He's maturing and he already feels self-confidence issues. And so to magnify it is not exactly the best welcoming way to introduce a character. But nonetheless, he still pioneered and paved the way for the idea of a young person in space living in on a ship. That's why I wanted to make sure I thanked him. But watching that scene where they were sitting him down and forcing his eyes open, that was kind of like it was emotional to watch for me. Because essentially, this game turned everyone into a version of the Borg, like this hive mind collective type of, right? It was like once you've played the game, now you're all on the same wavelength of destroy.
It's like a hypnosis, is a certain kind of control, a certain hypnosis. And then when you see that Robin Leffler's been taken too, you're like, oh no. And they're forcing, I mean, that was just the perfect ending. It was like, because it really raised the stakes and raised the stakes and raised the stakes. And suddenly you're stressed out. You're going, wait a minute, don't open your eyes, Wes. Don't open. And then they're forcing his eyes open. And you're sitting there going, like, how are we going to get
Who's
out of this?
left?
And
Yeah,
then
who's going to
Data
be
shows
left?
up like a superhero,
Yeah.
and that's because of what, Wes and Robin had done before.
Yeah.
It's just actually a really good episode. And, Ashley Judd was amazing in it. She was beautiful. She
Yeah.
was wonderful. She was charming.
Great performance. Yeah.
It was a very
And
memorable episode.
Wesley appropriately saves the day in this episode. I actually enjoy, I like this Wesley saving the day
It
episode.
worked. It totally
It
worked.
worked.
We're like, ah, there we go, Star Trek. It took you 5 seasons. You got it. You got this is the correct way to do things. This is good stuff.
Yeah, it was great. And then, what I thought was great about this episode too was when Wesley goes to the captain and he says, hey, look, I've uncovered this. I did the neural scan and I found out that their program, I don't know what it is, but something's going on here. And the captain's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to look into that. And then when they see him put it on the thing, it's like, oh, the
I
captain's
know.
like, they got Picard.
Oh, damn, what a twist.
I can't see Picard wanting to play that game. Get that game out of my
That
face,
was the
but
one thing that was tough was people would say, "Hey, you got to play this game." Everybody was like, "Okay." Nobody said, "Meh, I'll just have a
yeah.
soda. I'll be fine." But hey, we got to jump to our free for all in just a minute. So before we go, of course, time for today's home run of the episode. Oh boy, what a toughie. Who gets the home run of today's episode on the seventh rule?
Yeah, this one's a no-brainer. We're going to give this to Will Wheaton. Gave us a great performance as Crusher. We've loved Wesley growing up, seeing him in his Starfleet cadet uniform with the red on top. I thought it was great to see him in those colors, to see his evolution. Reminded me of my buddy Nog, of course. I can't see somebody go through Starfleet and work their way up the ranks without thinking of the late great Aaron Eisenberg. This was an emotional episode for me on many levels. I do feel connected to Wesley because he does have an experience that's similar to mine as far as being the young person on an all adult set that's doing Star Trek. And so there's a kinship there. And yeah, I'm going to give him the home run of the episode.
Easiest call of the day, man. Yeah, Will Wheaton for the home run of today's episode. His triumphant return, really good stuff. We could say good things about it forever, but the truth is it's a no-brainer, like you said. He gets the home run of today's episode. Great guest as well. Really happy to have him. Let's also talk about some people that we are happy about as well. Their names are Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Titus Muller, Dr. Muhammad Nora, Anil O. Palat, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, and Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, a.k.a. Crewman Guy, the Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Henry Unger, Allison Leachhide, Julie Manosfi, Jed Thompson, Dr. Susan V. Gruner, Glenn Iverson, Dave Gregory, Chris Sternick, Greg K. Wickstrom in Hawaii, Cassandra Gerard, Chuck A., Chris Garris, and of course, Jason Oaken. Stick around, everybody. We got the free-for-all up next. We will be right back on The Seventh Rule. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Seventh Rule. It is the free-for-all with Siroc Lofton, of course.
Hello.
Look who's here. Melissa Longo.
Hello.
Jason M. Oaken.
Everybody.
Eve England is out in Wales.
Hey.
Faith Howell is going to tell us why this is one of her favorite episodes ever, I bet. Allison Leach Hyde is also here. Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear, is here. Chuck A. has an awesome Ferengi family shirt on. And the Matt Boardman has the fun background. Looks like the same one as Melissa. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's a good one. Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm going to say this was like an 8.2.
Does anybody else have any guesses about what the number is on IMDb that doesn't already know?
6.3.
6.7.
How dare you?
7.9.
7.2. All right.
Wow.
You guys are all over the map on this one. You guys are usually a lot more honed
clustered
in. But the closest, without going over, was Chuck A, 7.4. I think that's Wembanyama's height, right? Victor Wembanyama is 7'4". Anyway, I got three non-appearance mentions. Let me see. Where were they? They were Molly. They mentioned Molly, of course. Chief O'Brien did. Said he looked like her father. Boothby was mentioned. And Spot. Oh, Wemby's only 7'3". He's still growing, Matt. did we get any other non-appearance mentions?
When did they mention Spot?
Somebody said about Data, why don't you check his cat?
Oh, no. Riker.
Riker said something like
Spot.
Cat, something like that.
I think there was one more, if I'm not mistaken.
Who?
I think they mentioned Adam, the guy he sprayed chili sauce on. Was that the same character that was in First Duty that passed away, that got killed in the accident? I didn't get a chance to look.
I don't remember the guy's name, but it was. I don't think it was that.
No.
Adam Martoni or something like that?
No, I don't think so. It's a different
character. Is that the same one? Okay. I wasn't sure.
It's a different character.
Okay.
I'm going to check. Good knowledge, though. Okay.
Joshua Albert.
What was it?
Joshua Albert is the
cadet
who died. Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
Otherwise, that would have been one hell of a revenge. Jeez, Wes.
That's
ruthless.
Straight up gangster.
Where's Chris McGee? Did we get any some kinds of or some sorts of?
There was, but I can't remember.
I got one from Wesley.
Yeah, there was one when Wesley was checking data and he said it was some kind of something. I didn't write it down there because I thought Chris was going to do it. Yeah, that's it. Some kind of damage.
We'll take it. Our crack team has nailed it. All right. Melissa Longo, will you please get us started off on the right track by telling us what you thought of this episode?
Yeah, I really like this episode a lot. I think it's a fun episode. I think the idea of using a game to infiltrate some kind of system is kind of diabolically clever. And because it's so unassuming, you wouldn't think that, oh, by playing this game, they're gonna mind control me, but they did in a very clever way. And going for their weakest link, I mean, Riker has always got his head in his pants, so she nailed it in many ways. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing Wesley again. I think this is one of my favorite Wesley episodes for him, because he's not a kid. He is still a kid, but you can see his maturity and how much he's grown. And I think that the chemistry between Wesley and Robin Leffler is really great. I really believed that they were smitten with each other, and the flirting, I believed, and the kiss, I believed. I believed everything about that. And I love that they nerded out together. I have two favorite lines in this episode. One is, I never met a chocolate I didn't like. And the other, because it's true. And the other one was about chocolate. Oh, chocolate is a serious thing. I enjoyed this episode. And I think it deserves more than the 7.4, to be honest. In my opinion, yeah. It's higher noticing than a 7.4.
Noticing a theme about the chocolate. Melissa, you love chocolate?
Oh, I love chocolate.
Me too. That's good stuff. Thank you very much, Melissa Longo. Excellent as always. Everybody get her some chocolate. She deserves it. Jason M. Oaken is here. He never met a chocolate that didn't piss him off. What'd you think of this one?
I'm not sure how to follow that. I'm out of words. Maybe I should go to my nearest replicator and get something. It'd be exciting. And yeah, and the episode is certainly an exciting watch. And maybe it's not the deepest of episodes, and you can look at sort of computer gaming and whatnot, but it's certainly fun and exciting. And I think for me, a lot of it's held up by the performances. I think the regular cast is very good. Will Wheaton is great, and Ashley Judd is basically a natural. I mean, just look at the technobabble they gave her and the ease with which she delivered it. It for somebody who is basically coming here for an episode or two and do something like this is not that easy. And even the way she operates the props and the sets, you often see guest stars trying to push those buttons, and that's not what she's doing. She's absolutely wonderful in it, and the episode ends on her, and too bad she didn't do anything after this. She would have been wonderful in other things, but again, it's just talent wasted, but I think a lot of that excitement we're experiencing is really the cast, because the script reads a little dry, and I think the performances really lift it. So it's one of those situations where it actually is much better on the screen than it is on a page. And again, it's a testament to the performances. And I think it's aptly directed. Nothing is over the top. Nothing is sort of stands out. So it really is, when you're looking at 26 episodes a year, this is kind of a solid entry. Certainly something worth watching.
Yeah. I love the way what you're wearing matches your background too. It looks really cool.
Yeah, sometimes.
Thank you very much, Jason M. Oaken. Great stuff as always. Eve England is out in Wales. This is her first time watching The Next Generation. Did you love this episode?
Well, I didn't really know. Sometimes I just think maybe I was just not watching it as it was intended to be watching it, because I just thought this was the most hilariously inappropriate episode I've ever seen in my life. To get out there, but why nobody was questioning something that, you know, Riker brought back from Riser with his background, I just do not know. It just seemed irresponsible from day one. I mean, he never comes back with anything sensible from there. So that just annoyed me from the start. But as Melissa said, I really like the idea of the game and how it was used to sort of control people and taking over places. And I really like Wesley. I pretty much sort of echo Melissa's comments there, and it's really good to see him with Robin again. I really felt that sort of brought the Wesley's character to life a bit more, and it was really refreshing having him paired with her. I thought that worked really well. I love the music. The music was foreboding. It had lots of intensity to it. That scene at the end where they finally capture Wesley, I thought was a pretty brutal scene, actually. And I just was getting super sort of a Clockwork Orange vibes from that. And I thought that's pretty dark what they did to Wesley at that point.
Yeah.
And I thought, and I just loved the general intensity and how balanced it was throughout. So I had no issues overall with it. But the big but here is that just having everybody with their best sex faces on was just massively distracting and just weird. And I don't know whether that was me watching it in a different, but I just felt if they had different expressions and reactions to the game, I think it could have been a whole completely different episode. And I don't know whether it was supposed to be just hilariously rude and innuendo like, or whether it was supposed to be serious, because for me, that just did not work. And I was kind of really frustrated by the way that they portrayed that. So I don't know whether that's just the way I sort of watched it, but I actually made James watch it with me a second time, and he said he just couldn't stop laughing either, and said it's just inappropriate. So sometimes I just thought that the, you know, all the innuendo, and it was like, you know, it's right from day one.
What innuendo, that, Eve?
Yeah.
I mean, even that alien's face was just inappropriate. I mean, it's just the whole thing about it was just distracting. And I just thought, yeah, if you look at that face again, it's just disturbing. And I just think, had it have been a sort of that different reaction to that game, I think this actually probably would be one of my, up the top of the list of my favorite episodes, actually, because I thought the rest of it was really good, but I just couldn't get over that aspect of it. It's just too much.
I'm going to find that alien and look at what you're talking about. Thank you very much, Eve England. Great stuff. Faith Howell is here. You've been defending Wesley Crusher since day one, and now you get to make your triumphant proclamation. What do you think of this one?
I mean, yes, I love Wesley, but Robin Loeffler like takes the whole episode. I love Ashley Judd because of this, and I've followed her ever since. But this, you know, is just for a little girl watching. You know, she's amazing, and I love her rules. I want to learn all of them, just like I do the rules of acquisition. Like I almost wonder if they're like those ideas came from the same person or the same couple of people. Wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, so sort of the same as Eve. I definitely picked up on some raunchiness that I missed in previous passes. the whole Wesley, sorry, this was meant for you. Gross, mom.
Yeah, that was.
No sloppy seconds, mom, thanks. Yeah, that aside, I do really enjoy this episode. I do think they could have played it differently with, I mean, this is sort of how we pass around social media now, right? Like, oh, have you seen this meme? check this out. Oh, have you tried this game? Have you seen this show? You know, I almost, you know, thought of Ryan at that level of, Ryan, do you feel like this? You feel chased this way when we're all like, hey, have you seen this show, Ryan? You have to watch it, Ryan.
So, yeah, and I don't watch anything.
So there we go. There's Ryan, you know, running away from us again.
Wesley.
So, but yeah, I think my favorite scene, like Melissa said, is the chocolate scene. That is like iconic Troy glass. So, and I mean, yeah, that ice cream has been goals for my entire life. Okay. Yeah. Anytime I have an ice cream, it is compared to that ice cream. So this definitely has a special place in my heart.
Thank you very much, Faith Howell. I'm with you on that chocolate. I want chocolate on top of chocolate on top of chocolate, and keep the fruit out of there. But Eve, I just like chocolate with chocolate and chocolate. But Eve, I don't see it. I don't know. What do you mean? I guess.
All right.
I actually didn't. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's something to this.
Before.
Somebody thought this was funny.
Yeah, that.
Can you imagine? You're in the makeup chair, and you start seeing it being more and more formed, and you're like, I can't.
That's not one you share with a family WhatsApp, is it?
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway, time to get serious, everybody. Allison Leach Hyde is here, very serious as always. What do you think of this one?
Quick, serious face. Yes, her headpiece, I saw the exact same thing Eve did and had to stop exercising for a minute to laugh for a bit. Yeah, it was a little bit too on the nose, I guess. Yeah, thank you.
Wow, you're good work, Allison.
So I do enjoy the episode. I remember watching it as a kid, that stuff all went over my head, and it did feel a little bit like a special of the week, because you know, we were, you know, driving home that, you know, addiction is bad, which is true. And, you know, going through, you know, video games is something some people do experience now. It wasn't much, you know, at that point, but, you know, it's interesting to see how we have kind of experienced this in culture now. And I think all of the cast was having the best time. One, having Will Wheaton back, which is great to have him. And two, they kind of got to do Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is fun. You know, they got to be different. They still had to wear their uniforms, except for Riker. And that first scene with him and Etna was really creepy to me as a kid. Still is, like the chasing around the room, her flinging his badge out the window and him not being pissed. I'd be pissed. But, you know, now after, you know, remembering the full plot of the episode, like, oh, yeah, of course she wanted that out of the room, because if she couldn't get the game on his head, it could have gone really bad for her. So this would have given her time to get away. So I'm like, okay, I get it. It still creeps me out. I'm like, I don't like this. But that happens a lot when Riker has love interests in the first scene of an episode. It's not his fault. That's the writer's fault. So yeah, it's fun. Actually, Judd is so sweet. I loved her costume when they were on their date with her little sweetheart neckline. I'm like, that was also really apropos to the situation. They're both young love and it's really sweet. And Will Wheaton got to experience his first kiss on Next Generation, and he got to give Ashley Judd her first on-screen kiss in Next Generation. So that's kind of
That's cute.
And so I'm sure he was quite lovely about it. So that's fun. Yeah, it's a fun episode, and I want Worf to bake my, you know, next birthday cake. So bring on pound cake from Worf.
Yeah.
Wow. Good stuff. Thanks very much, Allison Leach Hyde. Yeah, first kiss on screen, better than a 40-year-old, right, Srock?
Yeah, much better. And Worf's bakery doesn't take off in the future. I've kind of looked into it. His the bakery opens, it doesn't do well.
Today is a good day for pie.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, everybody. Carrie Schwent, aka Crafty Bear, is here. What did you think of this episode?
I love the heck out of this episode. I also, too, love Wesley Crusher very, 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 very much. I am with Eve on the awkwardness of certain scenes. Some of that could have been toned down just a smidge or two. And I will say this will not be the last time someone walks in on Beverly, but we'll put a pin in that for a couple of seasons. If you know, you know.
Oh, there.
But back to Wesley. I love how grown up he seems in this. What I love about shows where you have young actors that start out near the beginning, watching them grow up and grow older, and you can sort of track their age by their height relative to the adults around him, and seeing him either at the same height or almost a little bit above some of the adults is just always warms my heart to see. And of course we get another awesome Wesley sweater. I love all of his sweaters. Every single one are just fantastic. And Will and Ashley's chemistry was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Just the great subtle moments and just subtle facial expressions I thought were just very, very well done. And yeah, I wish we could have kept Ashley's character for a while. That character had something great about her. She was smart as heck. She was fantastic coworker chemistry with both Jordy and Will, although it looked like Will was smiling just a tad bit too much, or maybe I'm just reading into that a little too much, but I enjoyed her. I loved her laws. As a big fan of NCIS, I immediately thought of Gibbs's rules, because he has quite a few himself that pop up in the series from time to time. I think there's a complete list out there. I'm not sure if what's behind me is all of them or not. But yeah, and of course, I love chocolate. Love all kinds of chocolate. It makes me sad that Marina Sirtis doesn't like chocolate, given how much her character love chocolate. I read that, I'm like, oh, that just, it made me so sad.
And blasphemy.
Sunday looked amazing. I want all of it. The only thing that was missing from it was some chocolate wine, so I've got a little bit of that here with me. And of course the chocolate inspired this episode's limerick, and this one came to me in about 2 minutes. I almost couldn't write it down fast enough. So I will finish up with that. Chocolate is a wondrous creation. It brings one both comfort and elation. From white to milky to dark, it's hard to stop once you start. But it's the fix for all situations.
Cheers. Nice. Chris McGee again. Yeah. Thinking of you with the chocolate wine. Where is he today?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear. All right, Chuck A., a.k.a. TNG Fanatic. What do you think of this one? Did you love it?
Yeah, it was one of my favorite episodes of the season, because you got Will Wheaton back as Wesley and Ashley, what's her name,
Judd.
What's her last name? I went blank.
Judd.
Ashley Judd. She was wonderful. They had great chemistry together. I was waiting for one line of the episode that never happened. As Data saying, the game is afoot, just like the Sherlock Holmes, you know. Mm-hmm. But that didn't happen, of course. I was at a convention in, I believe it was in the L.A. area, when this episode was filmed, and they were talking about it, and they said the same thing, that they were so happy that Will Wheaton and Ashley Judd had this great chemistry, and they thought that the episode would be really well received. It was they mentioned that it was the prior episode to Unification, that Leonard Nimoy would be in the next episode. And they were really happy with this run of episodes from the start of the season. They thought that they were going in the right direction with these episodes. But I remember they were really gloating about this episode and the Spock episode, the next episode. But the episode itself was really good. I really enjoyed the when they were trying to catch Wesley running around the ship and in the Jeffrey tubes. And then at the end when they were trying to get the game into his eyes and forced his eyes open, he spent the whole episode avoiding that. And then, of course, Data comes in and with the light and takes care of everything at the end there. But one of my favorite episodes, the episodes just keep on getting better and better in the mm-hmm. fifth season.
Ain't that the truth? Again, Faith Howell told us that before. She said, you just wait, guys. Thanks very much, Chuck A. All right, the Matt Boardman is here. The Matt, your thoughts on this one?
Well, it's always a fun episode. I'm a Wesley Crusher fan. I always love when Wesley comes back after he left for the Academy. And it's funny, today as I was thinking about this episode, I was like, you know, in some ways, I like to play that what if game. What if Wesley had come back like Nog had come back? You know, they said, you know, obviously there were circumstances that brought Nog back. And I wondered, I was like, I wonder if Nog's coming back that way was them going, you know, I think we may have prematurely sent away this character, because I always like the way the crew interacts when Wesley is there. Like, I know that there's a lot of people out there who say a lot about Wesley Crusher. I don't agree with them because I've always liked the character. But yeah, there's just something about when he's back and the stories they're able to tell when Wesley's there that I think is just really fun. And I loved having Ashley Judd in this. I agree with Melissa that their relationship was very believable. It didn't feel forced. It just felt like, you know, they're two people in somewhat of a similar situation, right? I mean, she's like, oh, I still got friends back at the Academy, you know, people talk, you know. So I love that. And then, you know, Chuck mentioned the Wesley trying to escape at the end. And I don't know why, but I always think that those moments are so cool. Like, you know, him having set up stuff in advance, you know, tricking them with the phaser, hitting the force field and stuff like that. They did that a couple of times in DS9 that I really thought was fun. You know, Miles trying to get away and eventually escaping. In this case, Wes doesn't. You know, he gets trapped at a certain point and then, you know, obviously Data comes to save the day. But I don't know why, but that's just always so cool to me. So yeah, top marks for this episode. It's a lot of fun. I always look forward to it when it's in the lineup, and it never disappoints.
Nice. Thanks very much, the Matt Boardman. All right, Jake's final take. Sirach Lofton, any final thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I kind of didn't understand why they kept playing this birthmark issue. The birthmark thing, I was like, why are they, like, who's watching you in the shower at Starfleet Academy and then reporting back to everybody? That's weird to me. Like, what's going on over there? We need an investigation of this birthmark right here. It didn't sit that well with me. The other thing, and these are small nitpicks, but the other thing was, I hope we're not still studying Latin 500 years from now. Come on, guys. Can we move past Latin? It's like, what else is, we have to move on. It can't be, you know, that's the end all be all of intelligence. I just don't see it. Let me say also, Wesley can still Mac better than Geordi.
Yes. Yes. Right? And Geordi right? even made a comment about it too.
Yeah. Like, he was so much, he was like, hey, you want to go out for coffee later? Like, it's just the way he said it. It was like, that's how you're supposed to say it. You know, Geordi, can you take lessons? We need to, like, it's very simple. Just be casual. Don't get all nervous about it. You know, have a little self-confidence. And I like that about Wesley. I thought that was, he still got it. The kid still got it. one of my favorite moments in this episode was Data's late laugh when they were all at that party, when he just was like, ha, ha, ha. It was so, he's so good at those awkward Data moments. And that was one of them. And I thought it was perfect. It just, I had to rewind it a few times because it just made me laugh. Again, with Riker's Torpedo Bay, somebody shut that thing down because, I mean, it's always getting us into trouble.
His Torpedo Bay or his torpedo?
Well, his torpedo.
Somebody closed the Torpedo Bay. Okay. They need to close the bay. I mean, gosh. And then lastly, I'm going to say that I did like Robin's Laws. And I thought that Wesley ended on a great line, which was the end line for this episode. A couple of light years can't keep good friends apart. And I thought that was a nice kind of sentiment. And that's my final take.
Awesome. Well, that's it for us, everybody, if you can believe that. When Sirach just said Laws, my first thought actually was J.G. Hertzler's character on Deep Space Nine. I don't know why I didn't make that connection before, but love that character. Thank you very much to the Matt Boardman, Chuck A., Carrie Schwent, Allison Leach Hyde, Faith Howell, Eve England out in Wales, who's going to bed after this, Jason M. Oaken, Melissa Longo for myself, Sirach, Melissa, Mr. Aaron Eisenberg. Thank you all very much for hanging out with us. We will see you next time. And until then, always remember the seventh rule.